It's no easy assignment to come here today and face the descendants of the generation of New Lincoln here on the Illinois prairie that has changed so much since his time. A friend driving me over today commenting on how we didn't have to ford any creeks and how the roadway was such that the rain ran off from it. No mud to plow through. A very curious legend, one of those things that don't happen often in history. But a man who was a plain man, a very plain man, so plain that he was a joke to some people. They hollered at him when he was on the platform, their jokes. And yet, he proved himself. Before he went to the White House there at Washington to take the helm of the United States government to guide the ship, he had never held an executive office. He had never been a mayor or a governor. The predictions were that he wouldn't make much of an executive. And yet, in one complicated situation after another, he kept his patience and his temper, and with every month in office, he increased in wisdom and, I will add the word, cunning. He had to have a jungle cunning to deal with the kind of enemies he had, and I don't mean merely the enemies, the military enemies, I mean enemies in his own party who couldn't see his policies. A grassroots congressman out of Kansas stood up in the House of Representatives in Washington on the anniversary of Lincoln's birthday in 1923. And this homely congressman from the Jayhawker State spoke that afternoon one of the best poems that's been spoken about Lincoln. The poets have done no better by Lincoln than this humble Kansas congressman, Homer Hoke. There is no new thing to be said about Lincoln. There is no new thing to be said of the mountains or of the sea or of the stars. The years go their way, but the same old mountains lift their granite shoulders above the drifting clouds. The same mysterious sea beats upon the shore. The same silent stars keep holy vigil above a tired world. But to the mountains and sea and stars men turn forever in unwearied homage. And thus with Lincoln. For he was a mountain in grandeur of soul. He was a sea in deep undervoice of mystic loneliness. He was a star in steadfast purity of purpose and service, and he abides. And then on the 100th birthday anniversary of Lincoln, a Brazilian ambassador, Nabucco, at a centenary dinner to Lincoln in Washington, spoke no poetry, but he gave the reasons the basic reasons why Lincoln, why the name of Lincoln survives as it does. He said, with the increased velocity of modern changes, we do not know what the world will be 100 years hence. For sure, the ideals of the generation of the year 2000 will not be the same of the generation of the year 1900. Nations will then be governed by currents of political thought which we can no more anticipate than the 17th century could anticipate the political currents of the 18th, which still in part sway us. And then this remarkable sentence. But whether the spirit of authority or that of freedom increases, Lincoln's legend will ever appear more luminous in the amalgamation of centuries because he supremely incarnated both those spirits. By way of authority, he had been in office only a few weeks when he took to himself the powers of a dictator. He had no authority from Congress to declare a war, as the Constitution says the president should. He had no authority to take millions of dollars out of the national treasury and give it to men who would use it for purposes of saving the Union. Of the Constitution, he said, I will stick it in a hole when I have to. There are those who seek to destroy the Union, and they don't care about the Constitution. And it may be that in order to save the Union, I will not have to be too anxious about the Constitution. And yet, though he took the powers of a dictator, absolute power, he knew when to stop in the seizure of power. He had a respect for the Congress and its decisions. He had a respect for the will of the people and what the people said in their elections. Though slavery was the cause of the war, the cause of secession, the big national issue to him was union. He wanted first of all to save the Union. And so, across the first year that he was president, in none of his messages to Congress did he mention slavery or what to do about it. But when the time came to act, though he was told that it would be his political doom, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. That was a terrific document. What did it do? You can look at it in the legal sense. Not from the viewpoint of what was right or wrong about one human being owning another. But from the standpoint of the Negroes being on the tax books as property. Valuated at nearly $4 billion. And Lincoln decreed under military necessity, the federal government was confiscating that property, taking it, destroying it, giving no compensation to its owners. The most drastic act of its kind that the history of this country has ever known. But before he did that, he took a step of a kind that a real dictator, a man that liked absolute power, a step he would not have taken. In his message of December 2 in 1862, his message to Congress, he asked them to pass a measure that would authorize the federal government to buy the slaves, to give compensation to the owners of that property. Congress couldn't see it, Congress took no action, and therefore they went ahead in the wildest, wildest confiscation of property values that any president of the United States ever dared consider. We have a country here that's very curious among the nations of the earth. My friend Van Wack Brooks had a book out 3 or 4 years ago, The Confident Years. It was about American writers and what they were writing about, and his ratings of who was worth reading and who not. And that book was reviewed over in England, the British Broadcasting System, the British Broadcasting Corporation. Their reviewer gave the gist of this book in saying that these authors that Van Wack Brooks favored, books that he wanted more widely read, they were books by American authors who differed from the expatriate Henry James, who said America, though Boston-born, said America didn't have deep enough roots culturally, went over to England after a time, became, there's some dispute about it, whether he became an English citizen or a British subject.